9:01 here on this Thursday night, 97.5 The Fanatic. Joe Torti, Devon Givens coming to you from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast, 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli is producing as well as we talk about the Phillies letting go Gabe Kapler. Should they have moved on from some people in the front office as well, mainly Klentak and McPhail? We know the three-year extensions that they got during the season makes things a little bit more difficult, but not really because, hey, Middleton makes a lot of money. He can eat that and not worry about because of
I'm not worried about
contract. Exactly. Yeah. You just do it, and you get it done. And
you see it happen in colleges all the time, right?
Because
colleges, often state colleges, have more money than God, right? So if they decide that their coach isn't getting it done, they'll pay that coach out to go away. You know what I mean? And, oh, I can't believe that they're still paying him. Yeah, but they got the right guy in place. Or they've got a different guy in place. That's what I'm looking for the Phillies, is that, yeah, John Middleton, yeah, what do you have to pay these guys and gave them new deals? Yeah, it sucks. It's a bad investment. He's a business guy. He makes it all the time. You know, good investments, bad investments, you just roll with it and you do the next thing. But when you look at this team in particular, that wasn't the manager. I'm not convinced that this is the general manager or whatever it is that Andy McPhail does. I'm not sure that he's the guy either.
He says weird stuff.
Super weird. Bad stuff.
That's what he does. That's exactly what he does. 610-632-0975. Also, Eagles Vikings, if you want to jump in on that. And Joe, I got to get your reaction on something else as well. And we'll get to that shortly. Let's go back to the phones. We head to Drew in Westchester, who's checking back in with us about the Eagles and the Vikings. What's up, Drew?
Hey, Devon. Hey, Joe. How you guys doing, man? Happy anniversary.
Thank you, Drew.
Man.
Happy anniversary to you, of course.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, man, it's all our shows, you know, man. That's why I listen to you guys, you know. It gets me through the day sometimes, you know.
Yep.
So anyway, about the Phillies, I think Kapler kind of got a raw deal, you know. I think Klentak should have gone too. So I think, you know, that was kind of a pride factor with Middleton there, you know. He didn't want to do both of them, you know, because he did sign, what's his name, to the extension, Klentak to the extension, but regardless, you guys talked about that, I think. So about the Birds, you know, I was kind of, you know, thinking this season we were going into it with like this huge running back plethora, and now it's looking like we're hurting with running back because Sproles is out now for a few games, and it sounds like Clement might be hurt, and that gives us Sanders and Howard. So what are you guys thinking about our running back situation going into Minnesota?
Well, Sanders and Howard certainly are going to be the lead guys, and it looks like Jordan Howard is starting to really take hold of the number one spot for the Philadelphia Eagles, but they don't really use Darren Sproles much as of yet. They use him in game number one, but we've seen him sporadically since. So am I really worried right now? No, not really. And Corey Clement, I think Corey Clement will try to play through anything at this point, knowing that he hasn't gotten a lot of anything. Let's see how serious his injury is. But that being said, man, you know it's a passing team, Drew, with this Philadelphia team. So
sure.
I'm not too worried about it just yet until we really start to see, okay, these guys, when they're going to run into a really tough situation like trying to run against the Minnesota defense, is it going to be so problematic that they cannot get anything going through the air? I mean, they're going to have to solely rely on the aerial attack and they cannot get anything going on the ground. Then maybe we have to start to look at it as a problem. Right now,
yeah,
no, I'm not too worried.
No, I just like the balance we've had these last couple games between the run and the pass.
So I just
don't want it to be, completely abandoned and go back to, you know, just straight passing and, you know, I think Howard's definitely been coming into his own the last few games. I like, you know, the yards per carries he's getting, and I think Sanders is going to keep improving. So, you know, as long as those two guys stay upright, I think we'll be okay too.
Well, Drew, thanks for the phone call, man. Really appreciate it. And thanks for the kind words. The balance has always been the key. Whenever the Eagles have been bad, they've been too pass heavy. And whenever things have worked, the balance has been there. And sometimes it's been on the players to come out and say, hey, we need to get back to, you know, doing some of the things that we want to do. Offensive linemen love run blocking way more than they love pass blocking. So there's a lot of different things there. But I think Drew's onto something for sure when you're talking about those concerns and things like that. It's funny how Jordan Howard's had to scratch and claw for everything that he's gotten on this team, isn't it?
Remember game one where Sproles started the game, I think it was? Or Sanders started
stunning,
the game.
Stunning, yeah.
Yeah, Sproles started the game, yeah. Stunning. And Miles Sanders started to get the next bit of snaps. And Jordan Howard, I remember simply they looked at him on the sideline. He's just standing like on that second level behind the
people that are about to go in.
Right. It's like, dude, you know that's Jordan Howard right there, right?
Yeah.
And all
he gets no benefit of the doubt.
Does not.
From the coaching staff.
Does
at
not.
All.
And even in that game, remember against Washington where he had the big run?
Mm-hmm.
He trucked someone, which was like a 15-yard gain. Then he had the 5, maybe a 2, 1, a 6. And we didn't see much else because they had to pass and get themselves back in the game being down 17 so early. But it took Green Bay to really say, okay, we know this is Jordan Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give him the ball. Let's see how things are working. And Jordan Howard, the one that you said was very good years ago with the Bears, starting to see that guy again.
Yeah. Well, and certainly, I don't know if the plan is to preserve Jordan Howard until like right. midway through right. the season and then start to uncork him or whatever it was. I just know the Eagles. I knew that the Eagles were going to fall in love with what Miles Sanders looks like he can do. And I think that he's still a good guy for you moving forward. But it just seems to me, and I know that you've been on this train for a long time, Jordan Howard's the back the Eagles need right now. It's the kind of runner that sets up what you've done well in the past, and the kind of runner who runs like the LeGarrette Blunts and the Jay Ajayis and the guys with whom you've succeeded, not so much. You know, I don't mean this to be an insult to either player, but like LeSean McCoy light is what you're hoping that you get from Miles Sanders. Clearly, he's not that yet at this point, even though he's already liking social media posts about him being misused. You see this?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Come
yeah,
on, man.
You got to check that
Take
out.
It
that,
easy.
That he's
Take it
he's
easy.
Not having the right plays called for him.
I did see something like that. I didn't open it, but I saw.
Oh,
his
it wasn't
name
worth attack. Opening. You'll just get mad.
Don't do that. Let's not do that. We're only 5 in. There's plenty of time. And just like we were talking about Jordan Howard, remember the conversation about Jordan Howard being misused? But it was also the conversation about Jordan Howard being misused, along with, well, he's not getting much on the ground when he gets it, so it's not a big deal. Kind of thing. Now he's starting to produce, and people are looking at this being an opportunity to have a lead back and use Miles Sanders as that kind of change of pace person that we thought we were going to see. So I like where things are headed. I think Miles Sanders will be fine. He's probably their third best receiver right now behind Ertz and Jeffrey,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to need him against Minnesota because they have some tough linebackers there. They have some good secondary people. We know about Xavier Rhodes, certainly. But they're going to have their hands full against that defense, and they're going to need all hands on deck. How surprised are you, though, that with the work, the way it's working with the power running of Jordan Howard versus the more finesse style of running back, that this is it simply because of the personnel, knowing that Sanders is young and it's not there yet? Maybe if it was someone else with the same skill set, but that was Miles Sanders 2 years from now, where he's kind of established. And are you surprised that the style of running that they're using right now is working the way that it is working?
Not really, right? Because teams are hitting less and less, right? And
sure.
It's easier to track down
Good
scat
point.
Backs and get those guys down. Nobody wants to tackle Jordan Howard.
No.
Yeah,
you don't
you've
want
already
to feel
seen
that punishment.
That. Yeah, nobody wants to do that. Like, you see that you have to because you get paid to do it. Nobody's excited about going and trying to stop Jordan Howard.
Nah.
That's a good thing.
Certainly.
It's a great thing.
Absolutely, Joe. He's looked good these last couple of games.
Yeah,
since Green Bay with the 3 touchdowns, he's looked pretty good.
Yeah, that was the Jordan Howard game. That was definitely the Jordan Howard game. And I don't know if it's his job the rest of the way. I know that it's got to be his job now because he has looked so far and away the best out of all of the backs in game situations. I know that people said different things in a training camp and preseason, things like that. Look, rubber's meeting the road now. And he's the guy who's playing the absolute best. It's not even close.
No.
If it was close, I would give it to a rookie or a younger player or somebody that you're trying to develop, unless you're trying to run Jordan Howard's wheels off and then just send him off into free agency saying, hey, thanks for coming. You know what I mean? Like, that's a possibility, too. But for now, in terms of getting results, he's the way to go.
And Tyler and I, before the show started, we were looking at, what was it, Ben Jarvis Green, Ellis's numbers with Cincinnati?
Yeah, man, we got down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, you guys were doing
stuff. I don't know how
stuff.
We got there, but we got there, right? And they gave him the ball
278 times.
1 year. Remember, he had that good run.
Well, he never fumbled, was the thing.
He was very good, right?
Yeah.
And three carries on 3 fumbles on 278 carries.
Outrageous.
Amazing.
Dude never fumbled.
Amazing. And I only brought that up because we were talking about it. And you just brought up Jordan Howard.
Yeah. I brought up Jordan Howard and running him into the ground.
Run him into the ground.
You might see if Tim Hightower is available and want to see if you can give him the same treatment.
My goodness.
Shortest, most violent NFL career.
That ended fast.
Man. But that's a dude who ran trying to hit people, and you saw what happened. Like I think that Tim Hightower is like sneakily one of the people that GMs and owners point to, and they're like, we sure we want to do this running back thing? Like, you sure that we want to really invest in this guy?
Yes.
They're not all like Adrian Peterson, where you just, you know, hit and keep going for 10 years.
How long does Derrick Henry last?
Derrick Henry's another one, right? Because he had the
Alabama years and now the Tennessee Titan years. How long does he last?
Did he come in 2015 or 2016?
I want to say 16, but I could be wrong because we're going into 19. So I would say 16.
All right, so he's 25 years old. The second round of the 2016 draft, so good on you. 2023, he is done. Like, done, and it might be before that. He's 25 right now.
Is he Brandon Jacobs?
Oh, man, Brandon Jacobs. That was a big guy who didn't run like a big guy. Right? Like, isn't that crazy?
Right. Man, oh, it's crazy.
That's a name.
Yeah, how about that? 610-632-0975. Chad in Redding is joining us next on The Fanatic. Chad, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
Doing well. Thank you.
So my angle is this. I think Gabe needed to go. I don't think he was a good fit for the city. I think his managerial decisions sometimes weren't the best, as pointed out on Sunday Night Baseball by the ESPN crew. But my thought is this. A manager can only do so much with what he's given, and I think this problem goes back further. Kind of goes back to starting probably in the 2015 draft. They kind of whiffed on a few drafts there in a row. I think 2014 was the NOLA draft. They nailed that. 2015, 2016, they got, I think, Cornelius Randolph and Moniak. And I think in the 2015 draft, Bueller was in there and the Braves guys, Soroka. So they kind of whiffed there. And my thought is this. Baseball managers, probably out of all the major professional sports, have the least amount of control or force against the outcome of
impact. Yeah.
Correct. Exactly. Right. So, you know, here's a subjective question to you to kind of further my point. What would you think the differential would be between baseball's best manager and worst manager if they were given the same exact team?
It's a great question. Is it as many as 10 games? You know?
See, I go lower than that. And that's why I'm thinking, you know, it's more, in my opinion at least, it's more about the talent a manager is given than it is really about the manager. Now, football, you can out-scheme people. I mean, look at what the service academies do with the triple option, and they sometimes compete against the big boys. But baseball, it's more about, you know, just one-on-one matchups and kind of what you're given. And I just think they whiffed on the drafts a few years in a row there, and that killed them because I personally think that Klentak and McPhail did a decent job in the offseason. We were all happy when they flipped Santana and got Segura and, you know, Muto, and they got Kutch. I mean, I think they made some good moves in the offseason. So, you know, granted, McPhail didn't endear himself to the Philly faithful, obviously, with that comment about the playoffs. He's not good with people and probably shouldn't be talking to the fans. But no. I think they made some good moves. And I think my overall picture is Gabe and Klentak and McPhail kind of are getting scapegoated, kind of like the other callers are thinking as well.
Yeah, but most people have only said Gabe, not Klentak and McPhail, only the manager.
How did you feel about these guys over the summer?
Over the summer, I felt very good about what they did. And we knew the pitching was going to be an issue because we only could really count on the starting rotation, Aaron Nola. But the lineup we thought was going to be good enough, Chad, to kind of carry and overcome some of the deficiencies by the pitching staff. But as you know, yes, Chad, you can look at those things in the moment, but also change your opinion and adjust as things actually happen.
So when did things hit the fan for you with them, I guess is what I'm trying to figure out. Because there were a lot of rosy feelings around these guys around over the summer, at least.
Yeah, and thanks for the call, man. I think, Joe, we actually had this conversation. It wasn't necessarily just the front office. It was the team in general.
Yeah, when you're falling out of first place, right?
And for us, it was right when I came back from surgery, I think it was, in July, when I got back in here. late June, early July when I got back in here. And I was like, yeah, I've been able to sit down and watch them and pay more attention. And I'm done. I'm out. Ty, remember we were having this conversation, right, Joe? And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of out on these guys because they just don't seem right. And the injuries started to happen. And then McCutchen goes down. Yeah, we gave those guys credit for what they did. And we thought the lineup would be able to carry things. But we always say it, man. We'll adjust. We're allowed to adjust. And we adjusted. They weren't that good.
Tyler, you say that there was an exact week.
An exact week.
That you were,
you know,
out.
And I got to tell you guys, to preface this, you know, as someone who occasionally hosts shows, like you guys do it 4 or 5 times a week, you've got to contain yourself or you'd blow your vocal cords out. With someone who occasionally does show, I did one show on a Sunday night, and it was just the one that week, so I put everything I had into the 3 hours. It was the weekend after they lost 2 of 3, or maybe it might have been 3 of 4 to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and then they immediately went and lost 2 of 3 to the Chicago White Sox. And I exploded on this team because they had no heart. They had no fight. There was no dog in this team whatsoever. And they just kind of let this happen.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing, is that when you see it slipping through your fingers, that's when, to me, it matters. Because look at the Eagles, right? We knew beforehand. It is remarkable how similar the story is. We knew beforehand that there was a group that was incredibly deficient.
Corners.
Corners, right? Knew it ahead of time. Still, people pick this team to get to the Super Bowl, maybe win the Super Bowl, certainly be a big-time contender in the NFC.
I said they should get to the NFC Championship game, and the corners are my number one issue. Have been. Still are.
So, when does it become an issue? When the results don't meet the expectations.
Correct.
Regardless of what, you know, if we knew ahead of time that there was a group deficient, yeah, we still expected that things would be good enough. It's not that you're crushing the corners. It's how did you not upgrade? How did you not do what you were supposed to do? Understanding that the offense probably underperforms if you're not doing what you need to be doing. Understanding ahead of time that we're not dumb fans. We know what the struggles are going to be with the team. We were excited about the lineup. We were not excited about the pitching staff. The bullpen, I know some people were excited about it. I was not excited about the bullpen. There were some there were things that you could look at and say, yeah, they're not a perfect team. But they should still be pretty good considering the upgrade and where they were last year with a roster far inferior to this one.
And no way they should be in fourth place in the National League East.
That's exactly it.
No way. No way.
81 and 81.
Yeah.
There you go.
We've taken all of these phone calls on Gabe Kapler and the Phillies and Klentak and McPhail. We've gotten a lot of phone calls on McPhail and how bad he and Klentak have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is really the first time that I'm hearing, Joe, I don't know how you feel and Ty as well. This is the first time that I'm hearing that he is the scapegoat.
Well, I mean, it was always, we used the term fall guy.
Fall guy, scapegoat. It was more of they all have to go. Or Kapler has to go, and that's it. Now we're hearing, now that he's gone, he's the fall guy, he's the scapegoat.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
I didn't expect this.
I have to admit, I didn't either. But the truth is that it does make sense to a large degree because, like, I disagree with the caller. I think that the best manager in baseball can make a difference. Not a huge difference, but I think 10 games is not outside the realm of possibility for the best manager who makes the best decisions versus the worst manager who makes the worst decisions. Having said that, though, with the bullpen and the starting pitchers, what were you going to do? Like that is a worthwhile thing to ask. And that's why, you know, the fall guy thing comes in because, like, it's on the GM to upgrade this roster in these talent weak areas.
Especially when you don't do it the way you want to do it in the offseason free agency trades, and you have two other pitchers that are out there for so long, and you don't get either one of them at numbers that you didn't even expect them to be lower the way they was with Keuchel and Kimbrel.
Right. And that, once again,
that's where, again, to the caller's point.
Yeah.
All right, we knew it, but then in season, these guys don't have jobs. They get to the other teams, the Cubs and the Braves, and they have lower numbers than expected. Now we adjust. All right. You could have gone out there and upgraded. It wasn't when we expected in the offseason in the winter. like everyone else is signing players all over the place, you getting Bryce Harper and trading for signing McCutcheon and trading for guys.
Right.
This was later.
Right.
So you could have kind of cleaned up that mistake that you, or not even a mistake, could have cleaned up the hole that was left that you could not fill, the void that you could not fill the way you wanted, and you didn't. So to the question again, how did I feel? I felt good, but there were opportunities still then to fix areas that needed some adjustments to make sure this team was better off with those two, one of those two players, well, potentially.
And the part of it that is a struggle is that you saw the positivity coming in the offseason, but there were no in-season adjustments, like you're saying. Like, you can't just sit back and be like, I've done my job, when you sign these guys and make these trades and do things like that. When needs arise, you've got to be able to shake things up somehow. Something's got to happen. And that just didn't this year. There were all kinds of SOSs.
And I like Jay Bruce bringing it in, but that wasn't enough.
Corey Dickerson.
It's not enough.
We're talking about pitchers, people. Yes. Like, find a way to make it. Like, and to be fair, Drew Smyly, Jason Vargas.
I
appreciate that you actually did, you know, technically get pitchers in there. It's not something that excites me. I'm sorry.
What was Drew Smiley's record?
Yeah, it probably helped.
The Phillies. Remember we were talking about him? He's either going to go 11-2 or 2-11.
Yes. San Antonio Mission's great Drew Smiley.
4-7.
San Antonio Mission.
Sorry, Ty. 4-7 for the 2019 season with the Philadelphia Phillies. He'll be back.
Jeez. Oh man. That's just great.
Yeah,
really,
I'm sorry.
Really, that's not true.
My bad, Ty. 610-632-0975. Andrew and Brian and everybody else, hang on, Drew. We got you first when we get back, for sure. Thanks for hanging on. 610-632-0975. And on the other side, I want to play some audio for Joe Torti and get his initial reaction on what his thought was as we get ready to hear that on the other side.
Ooh.
Joe Torti, Devine Givens, Tyler Zuli producing, Brian and Andrew will also have some thoughts on the audio played as well going forward, right here, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Fanatic.
The Fanatic. Joe Torti, Devon Givens, Tyler Zuli. 610-632-0975. As promised, before we get to the audio, you know what? Andrew, hang on one second. I want to play this audio for Joe and you and Brian and everyone else to get your initial reaction on what this was like for you on Tuesday night.
Fans want Simmons to shoot a three, and he makes it. Ben Simmons closes out the first half with a three-point shot, and that makes it 82-41, a standing ovation.
You and I, Joe, thanks, Ty. You and I, Joe, talked about this all summer when those videos would come out, and you know, I was like, I don't care.
Right,
You know, whatever. I've seen him do it, what he did the other day. Tuesday, I've seen him do that as well, and I was happy to see him do it, certainly, just like everyone else. But it was amazing how the whole thing wound up playing out, the way he dribbled the clock out, shot it with about 4 seconds left on the clock. There was some change left after it went through the basket, the celebration, so on and so forth, against the Lions,
right?
What did you think?
So many thoughts here. I assume the first answer is, what did I think of the shot itself?
Yes.
All right, whatever. Like, it's at the end of a shot clock situation.
It was not even the shot clock. It was the half.
Yeah.
They were going into halftime.
End of the half situation against the team that they were playing against. Like, I think that... I do not mean this to be disrespectful to anybody involved. This was like... I'm not convinced that this is a surefire step up from the summer runs, considering the people that he was playing against in some of those summer runs.
Does it matter who he's playing against?
Yeah.
Because he shot it.
Yeah, it matters. It matters, right? Like, it, because are you going to take your shot when it's, you know, whoever in your group, if it's Paul George? Like, you know what I mean? Are you,
well, we know Paul George is going to back off. So the opportunity is going to be there. The question is, like you just said, is he going to shoot it?
Yeah. Well,
he shot it. Doesn't matter who the opponent was because he did shoot it. They're going to back off. Marcus George's hunt on the Lions, a Georgia Tech product.
Yes.
They look like, as I looked at the video again, they look like the Lions were in a 2-3 zone. He was telling his man to back up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watch the video again. He was telling the man closest to Ben Simmons, the other guard at the top of the 2-3 zone, back up. He did not. And Ben shot it. He was a couple of feet. He was just inside the hash mark, a couple of feet behind the three-point line. And he drilled it.
I
he's a zone buster, Joe.
Yeah, now he's a zone buster. Okay. Yep, he's a zone buster now. Personally speaking, I did not believe that the shot itself was that big of a deal.
Okay.
The more telling thing to me was the reaction to it by a lot of people involved. Tom McGinnis, Joel Embiid, Brett Brown, right? Joel Embiid mobs him like he just hit like the game-winning shot in Game 7, mm-hmm. the NBA Finals,
correct.
Right? And Brett Brown just said, kind of like, yeah, whatever. We all have that guy. And Tyler, I'm sorry if you've heard this story already. We all have that guy who you play with, you keep him around, he's a good guy, good to hang out with or whatever, hits his one shot a year. I'll never mob that guy when he hits his one shot a year because it's patronizing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, if you're Ben Simmons, you don't want Joel Embiid to like be hugging you and picking you up and stuff because you hit a shot against the Lions. You know what I mean? Like, so
but we know also know Joel Embiid is a playful type of clown from time to time. Where, and I mean clown in a fun way, because he just simply has fun out there when he's engaged like that. And everyone hears the chatter. Everyone has heard the chatter. They were happy that he finally did it in a public forum.
Yes.
With everyone watching.
But if you're Ben Simmons,
I got your point.
You know what I mean? You're like, nah. I could have been doing this.
But he did look at the bench and they erupted. He looked at the bench like, yeah, I just made that. What? He looked at them.
Yeah, he did.
He did. He may not have celebrated like them, but he kind of, he dunked early on and flexed, right? In the and one.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Got to the free throw line, whatever. It's similar to him making that shot and dunking, basically, and flexing by staring at the bench. Like, yeah, I just drilled that.
Okay. Objectively good thing. It's an objectively good thing that it happened. I'm not doing backflips quite yet.
Neither am I.
Is that a fair thing to say?
Neither am I, because all you right. know me.
I do.
Shoot 17-footers.
Yeah, exactly.
Shoot 17-footers. Shoot floaters, teardrops, free throws. That's what I want.
Yeah, you and I have never been all about that three.
Doesn't have to be a three. It'll
not
take
from
him sometimes because they're open and he's going to have to shoot them sometimes. But I'm more about the mid-range game for him. Free throws, 70%.
Yes, sir.
610-632-0975. Andrew in Phoenixville, thanks so much, man, for hanging on. Appreciate it. You're on the Fanatic.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Andrew, doing great, man.
Congratulations on the 10 years. I'm looking forward to the next 50 or 60 years listening to you guys, hopefully.
Oh, you bet.
No question.
I guess, I don't get excited by a preseason game where he shoots a three. Yeah, big whoop-de-doo. It was against a Chinese team. So, you know, let's see if he is able to pull the trigger on, a defender like LeBron James or, as you said, Paul George. Let me see what he does with that in a real game.
Yeah, it's the
when it actually means something. So, you know, I'm not even going to pass my excitement. I'm going to save my excitement for another day for him.
Right.
So, when I was on hold, I was actually looking up the available Major League Baseball managers, and one familiar manager came into that list that we actually did have as a manager, I believe. Is no longer with the Cleveland Indians. Is that Terry Francona? Is he no longer with them?
I didn't see Tito. Is Tito out? I didn't see that.
I would think he would stick around for it?
I Googled it just a few minutes ago, and I said available Major League managers.
I did not
his
hear
name
that.
Came up. So,
I didn't hear that.
Under the Google list of available managers. So I'm wondering, and obviously he's familiar with Philadelphia. He's a winning coach. He's a winning manager. He's got, two World Series with the Red Sox, and he's done pretty well with the Cleveland Indians. So, I mean, if he can be able to come here and put this team back together and put it on the right track, I think you'd be a really great manager. My next question would be, obviously, you know, when Littleton did his interviews with all the players, is he going to do the same interviews with hiring a manager, or is he just going to go out and interview all the managers and just make a decision on that? Do the players really have a say in, you know, bringing in a new manager as they did with, you know, trying to exit a manager out as well? And then my third point is, obviously, you guys did the Road Series record. I'm going to go 3-0. I think they're gonna wipe the table, because Cowboys, I'm not too impressed by them because of what they did against Green Bay. And then the Vikings, I'm not impressed by them. And then, you know, the Buffalo Bills, yeah, you know what? They may have a nice little run early, but it seems like every year that they crash. So I have a feeling they're going to go 3-0, and they're going to go absolutely, you know, go into the break and do well. So.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Andrew. Thanks for the kind words, man. First of all, Terry Francona looks like he's still with the
last Cleveland. I saw, yeah.
Looks like he's still with Cleveland.
And I saw that he was busy giving generic answers after they'd been eliminated. I haven't heard that they're going to move on from him.
No, I don't think they will.
No, I mean, I probably wouldn't either.
No, not right now. No, but that's their thing, and, you know, whatever. Got to the World Series a couple of years ago.
Yes. I mean, there are lots of veteran managers that I'd be interested in everyone. Like, I think that exploring what the best fits are is important. I think some of the players count more than others. Like, I don't really care what Sean Rodriguez thinks about who should be the next manager. I care deeply about who Bryce Harper thinks is the next manager, because hopefully that guy's there for the rest of Harper's tenure. You know what I mean?
And in the conversations with Real Muto with his contract,
yeah,
the conversation with a manager is going to be brought up. So his voice is definitely warranted in this particular situation.
For sure. Yes. So there are definitely some that count way more than others. I just don't know. I don't know how John Middleton's going to look at it. And say, you know, we're looking at it from the total democratic, everyone gets a vote kind of angle. I don't know if that's in the best interest of your team, because not all these guys are going to be back or consequential next year, you know? So it's something that certainly we'll have to be watching and paying attention to. Is there any way that they throw so much money at Joe Maddon that, like, because the things that I read, Angels and Padres second.
I saw the Padres sneaking in there. Yes.
Yeah. And the Phillies, like, in third place in terms of Joe Maddon's interest.
But does the Dodgers, do they jump in there if Roberts is out?
You can't fire that guy, can you?
I don't think so. But if he, yeah, I mean, we keep seeing the reports and talking about who's more to blame, Kershaw and Roberts. And if Roberts is part of it, are they going to be out now? Because
right.
They haven't done what everyone expected. Most people thought they would win this year in terms of the National League. Here they are getting knocked off by the Nationals.
Sheesh.
So, yeah. the name
didn't want to play against the Dodgers. Remember that.
Yes.
No, it wasn't a big deal if you didn't make the playoffs, because you're not in a rush to get in a series against the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Just remember that,
mm-hmm.
Phillies fans.
Yep. Yep.
They got swept under the rug. That's another fireable thing that you can't say.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
How about that? 610-632-0975. Brian, we got you first to give you all of your time. Joe Torty, Devon Gibbons with you as we talk about... Here, the Phillies firing Gabe Kapler. What would you want them to do now going forward in terms of the manager and the Eagles and the Vikings? What's going on there as well? Big game this weekend for the Birds. Started a 3-game trip. How do you feel about that? 610-632-0975.
Feel good, D.
Feel pretty good?
I feel great.
All right. I like that. Talk to Tyler Zuli as well.
Eagles by a million.
Eagles by a million. We'll see what Tyler has to say as well right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
The Fanatic. Joe Torre, Devon Givens, 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli here with us, as well as we hang with you until midnight talking Gabe Kapler in the Phillies. He's out. Who do you want in? Should anyone else have gone with him? Mainly, of course, Klintak and McPhail. What do you guys think about that and the Eagles and Vikings this weekend? Big game for the Birds. How are you feeling on a Thursday before the game gets underway? Kickoff Sunday, 1 o'clock. And, of course, we'll be talking about it this weekend.
You bet.
Oh, right here on the Fanatic. 610-632-0975. We go to Brian in Plymouth. Meeting. B, thanks for hanging on, man. You're on the Fanatic.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing great, good. Brian. How are you, man?
I'm good. So, first of all, no Joe Maddon. No. I mean, number one, the reason the Cubs are, you know, at least in the postmortems that I read, the problem there was that there was no accountability in the clubhouse. And that's exactly the problem that everybody has been talking about with the Phillies. I mean, he's kind of a player's manager who relies on veteran players to police the clubhouse.
Right.
And aside from that, he is unsufferably condescending. I really think it would be a terrible mix in this media market. I mean, it might be great for your business.
Oh, it'd be outstanding for our business.
But, oh well, I mean, so would a perennial World Series contender, which, and we were not beating the Dodgers, Joe. I mean, they had, the Nats have cannibalized their three awesome pitchers to beat the Dodgers. We were not, you know, Aaron Nola and whoever else was not getting us by the Dodgers.
Well, I agree with you, actually, Brian, but like that kind of lends itself to my bigger problem is like we decided that the Nationals overpaid for Patrick Corbin, right? And Corbin was an essential part of their ability to cannibalize those pitchers in this series, you know, so it ends up being a deeper issue.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I was fine with, you know, I was confident coming into the year. I was fine with the moves. You know, I was wrong. And clearly they were too. But I think it is kind of analogous. The Eagles cornerback situation and the Eagles Philly starting pitcher situation where in both cases you had a bunch of guys you needed to find out about. In the Phillies case, every one of those young starters, I mean, you would think that just out of law of averages, one or two of them would have at least stepped up and showed that they were at least back end of the rotation starters. And then you go out, you're contending, and you go out at the trade deadline and get a guy. And that just totally failed. I mean, all those young pitchers, all those young starters were worthless. And they kind of were going for the 2008 model of having a very strong bullpen and an offense that was never out of a game. And both of those things failed for various reasons. So.
Well, Brian, you're right. It ended up being the nightmare season. So, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Are you saying that maybe Gabe Kapler shouldn't have been fired if all this other stuff was going sideways?
No, I mean, I've got no love for Gabe, but I also don't think that, to me, like, you know, like you said a couple minutes ago, the main thing is, were the players on board? You know, And there was a guy earlier that said, like, there's a baseball manager has very little to do. I mean, I would say the same with a basketball coach, but it's about getting the whole team, keeping them all pulling in the same direction, which is, you know, that kind of clubhouse chemistry thing. And but to me, it's just like their organizational talent is not there, and they probably hit the gas a year too quick or a couple of years too quick. And now the only, you know, they've made their bed. I mean, they've traded for Real Muto. They have to re-sign him. They're paying Harper. I mean, the only way I can see out of it is they just got to throw money at the problem and cross their fingers.
Well, we've seen teams, and Brian, thanks for the phone call, man. Really appreciate it. We've seen teams build that way. right? Teams that haven't historically drafted well. Now, one of those teams, the Yankees, has started to do an unbelievable job of identifying young players and bringing them up and drafting well and international players and things like that. But the Phillies have not been a good drafting team. I would argue if there's been five worse drafting teams than the Phillies, given their draft capital, I'd like to know who they are, because the Phillies have been really, really bad with some pretty primo draft position. It says to me that they're going to have to take the, you know, late 2000s Yankees approach of buying, you know, players and trying. That's why I think they should have been in on everybody. What do I care that Patrick Corbin was too much money? Like, I don't care about that. Even when Dallas Keuchel was too much money, in hindsight now, it's like, what do we care? You know, would Kimbrel have helped? I don't know. Maybe here. Like, there are a lot of different ways that it slid sideways, like Brian laid out there. If everything's going to go against you, and by the way, I do think it was just tough luck that none of the pitchers ended up being worth anything when they all looked poised to maybe take a step forward this year. It stinks that you went 0-3. Mm-hmm. It really does. But once you realize that that's going to be the case, some kind of adjustment, some kind of audible, some kind of anything that puts you in better position to compete instead of fading down the stretch would have been great.
Is that your belief when it comes to the money being spent all the time?
What's that?
Not caring.
No, it's not all the time. Like, I think that, like, in baseball in particular, right, you've seen teams come up when they've just drafted really, really well, and then you add one more piece, you know, in free agency or whatever. I think spending money is a fool's game in, like, the NFL. I think that it's stupid to try to build a team through free agency. I just don't think that that works long term in terms of sustaining championship windows and things like that. Then there are others, you know, some other sports. Basketball clearly works. You don't need to be a great drafting team in order to put together a really good NBA team. It helps, and it's a way that you can do it, but you don't have to. And hockey is the same way. Like, the draft helps out tremendously, but you don't have to. You can find ways to get it done with trades and free agents and things like that. But in baseball, it's we've seen teams that are willing to spend win championships. The problem is that there's an identity crisis with the Phillies where it's like you can't pretend that you're going to spend stupid money and have the 13th highest payroll in the league. You've either got to be in or you got to be out.
Yeah, you can't say stupid money but only spend it on one player.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they weren't stupid enough. They needed to spend more of that stupid money, I thought.
Yeah, and it didn't have to be to the tune of another $100 million contract. It was simply, okay, what is Kimbrel or Keuchel, whatever one you felt like would help right now, that kind of money. That's just adding on to the stupid money that you put out there for Bryce Harper, and on and on and on.
And there's just nothing coming down the pike, you know? Mm. Like, Mickey Moniak is not going to save you coming down the pike. Like,
that's why you talk about the draft.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Because then you look at the Astros, and you see the Braves do what they did, and now you're looking at the Phillies and where the Phillies
Cubs
are. Cubs
did say, it.
What happened?
Cardinals. Yeah, it's... Yeah.
Guys, the Braves, by the way, who were stripped of draft picks for a three-year span.
Yes.
For effectively cheating. They still got it done.
Yes.
Lost their best prospect. The Angels have him, and they're still a near 100-win team.
Yeah. I mean, it tells you something.
And even look at the Astros. Look how the Astros were the Astros.
Oh, yeah.
They were on the
punchline.
Whoa. It's the Astros because they develop these young people, and they make the necessary trades that they need to make.
They're going to keep Garrett Cole after all this. Right. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to find a way to make that
work. They're like, what? We're not giving up. He and Verlander are going to do this for a couple more years.
Yeah. Going to try to make this happen. Man, postseason Verlander is just a machine, isn't he?
Let me ask you this,
like the anti-Kershaw.
You know what? Yeah. See, that's where I was going.
Sorry.
What's the problem there? What's the problem?
It just doesn't work.
What's his deal?
Doesn't work. Just I can't explain it. It doesn't seem to be injury.
What is the explanation
is that it just doesn't work. The postseason happens, and then the sixth inning comes, and it is just a disaster, and the ERA turns into 12. Like, that is... I can't explain it. Sometimes you just got to throw it up and say, this is what it is. Let the computer win on this one for Clayton Kershaw.
Let the computer win. Oh, man. Wow.
6-1-0. I mean, can you explain it?
No, I cannot. I cannot. 610-632-0975. I can't explain it. I can't explain it. Maybe Tyler Zuli can explain it on the other side. Clayton Kershaw, what is going on? Joe Torre, Devon Gibbons with you until midnight right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.